If you're looking to save some money on your wireless plan, take a look at Visible Wireless. They're a transparent wireless carrier with nothing to hide. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, where you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. One line wireless, just $25 a month with taxes and fees included. That's unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Switch now at Visible.com. You shouldn't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. Like Visible, the wireless company making wireless visible.
Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Anna Sheridan, missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. How did I get that?
Someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil. There's no place for ghost stories in this investigation or any other.
I need you to find me.
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.
This is Steve Downes, the voice of Master Chief, Sierra 117, and you're listening to Podcast Unlocked, the world's number one Xbox podcast. Now, finish this fight. Master Chief, out.
Welcome, friends. It's Podcast Unlocked, episode 488 for March 30th, 2021. Ryan McCaffrey joined by Destin Legarry.
Bam! And we have to make it a bam-tastic episode because, you know why. It's Cam's last episode for a little bit.
I was going to say, you're setting me up. Just take it. Just run. Just take the layup. Run down the court. Don't pass the ball.
This episode.
Just go ahead and put the ball in the basket. Cam Hawkins, good to see you, my friend.
Good to see you all.
You've had an awesome run with us here on Unlocked. We are going to be sad to say goodbye for now, as Destin has come back. Damn it, Destin.
I wore the collared shirt to see him off properly.
But yeah, Cam, you've been it's been so much fun getting to know you. I mean, we met you last year, but really, really having you settle in with us this year, I've had a blast podcasting with you.
Yeah, it's been an honor. Like I I've been a listener of the show for a very long time, so just, you know, this is a dream come true, and I'm just very thankful that you gave me the opportunity. I want to thank all the listeners who have been super kind to me on Twitter, and, you know, Miranda, Destin, Brandon, all being so welcoming and kind.
Absolutely. You earned it. We will see you again, no doubt. But for now, we've got a super busy show. Miranda Sanchez, how are you?
I am good.
Welcome, you seem everybody. Good. You see, I can hear the chipperness in your voice. This is good.
Yeah, it's been a good morning. It feels like it's finally spring, so I'm yes. in good spirits.
All right, well, let's not waste any more time. Our couple quick PSAs to get out of the way. Number one, again, youtube.com/IGN Games. That is the new place to subscribe to get this show on YouTube. If you're watching us there, as I encourage you to do, the old Unlocked channel is no more. So youtube.com/IGN Games, the home of all of our shows now, but there is an Unlocked playlist there for you. So if you just want to go there for Unlocked, that is taken care of. And the loot box, as you'll hear later in the show, I've been grateful to see that the video questions are starting to come back in. I'm taking those via Twitter now. So just record yourself, put up a video on Twitter of yourself asking the panel a question for the loot box segment, tag me in it, DMC_Ryan, so that I see it, and then I will add it to my, I've just started a document with everybody that's been sending them to me, so we'll get the first one of those later on in this episode. And also, before I move on, I don't know if anybody else has had a chance to play yet, just want to just stop and say, It Takes Two from Joseph Farris and Hazelight Studios is outstanding. Have any of you had a chance to play it?
I have not yet.
Not yet.
Not yet.
Not yet.
Yes. I mean, it is tough because it's two player. I actually had to, schedule time. That's how much of an adult I am at this point. I had to schedule time on my calendar Jonathan Dornbush and I started playing it. We did the first 2 hours. It's fantastic. And I have to be honest, I wasn't as excited about this after after A Way Out, which I completely adore. I love just the sort of noir 70s drama, that the tone of that game. And It Takes Two is like, could not be further from that. It is a complete, like, whimsical kind of part Pixar, just very colorful and light, but also with a sort of serious relationship message underneath. But the gameplay, boy, it is awesome. But we played 2 hours and we haven't done the same thing more than once. Like, it's just, it keeps mixing itself up and it's great so far. So if you've got somebody to play the game with, either in your home or a friend online, remember, it's got the friend pass. So you can just buy it and invite a friend to play it with you. Just wanted to mention that. And we gave it a 9 out of 10 on IGN. So that's part of what really inspired me. Like, okay, if it's a 9, I got to play this thing. And so far, I do not disagree with that 9. Okay. Friday, everybody, we had a very big ID at Xbox game showcase that was streamed live on the Xbox channels, on Twitch, and on IGN. And it was a beast. It was nearly, it was upwards of 4 hours long. And there were so many games covered. The highlights for me, I want to go around the table here. 12 Minutes, Last Stop, which is a new Annapurna game. We're talking about Annapurna last week. And the guy in, and not just because the guy in Last Stop looks like me, but you'll see it in the trailer. Moonglow Bay, Echo Generation, which I love the demo for, that's already on Xbox. And we saw another glimpse of Stalker 2 and a new trailer for The Ascent, which I liked a lot as well. So Miranda, I know some stuff stood out for you from this as well.
Yes, absolutely. So one of the ones that I actually got to write up was Death's Door. So it's from the Titan Souls devs, and it just looks like an awesome sort of adventure that has like that whimsical, almost Ghibli feel to it. That's what they told me. They're like kind of having some aesthetics from Ghibli, but also creepy because it's about death. So it seems cool. You play as little Kuro and you got to go collect some souls of some very old monsters that need to die. And I'm very about it. The two worlds that you travel between, one of them is in a grayscale theme of where the crows live, and it's very stylish. Like, I was just hooked as soon as I saw it. So I'm excited for that. The combat looks super sleek. And I'm excited because another thing I'm excited for a lot of things, but one of the things that I am looking forward to with this was their, how they talked about collectibles, because as you guys know, I work on the guides team. And so good collectibles are so important for me. And they were saying how they designed their collectibles, which are called shiny things because crows like shiny things, to be something that can just be fun to look at, but also sort of allude to other secrets in the world you can find. And so that they have multi-purpose use of just going to find them for one, for the fun of it. And two, because they can actually lead you to cooler things, is awesome. So I'm looking forward to that. Some other ones that I've known about for a while, and I was just so happy to see spotlighted here. And I think we have these on a very specific list for Game Pass, is Boyfriend Dungeon. If you guys don't know this, I've seen this at PAX before. No, it was at E3. So long ago. So Boyfriend Dungeon is a very cool game where you go into a dungeon and then you find weapons, and those weapons are also people that you can date. So it's very up my alley. Little Witch of the Woods, which is just a cute little adventure game. I'm still learning more about it too, because that one's very new to me. And it looked super cute. Of course, Little Witch in the Woods, just screaming my name. Wild at Heart, we've seen a few times. Last time I got to play it at the last ID at Xbox showcase during GDC, which would have been right around this time. Quite sad, but that is shaping up to be something very cool, as expected, just based on what we've played previously. And then another that I'm really excited for, I know I'm excited for a lot of things, but it's nice to be excited, is Dead Static Drive, which I wouldn't initially think is something that I would play because it's a horror survival adventure.
Wow, yeah, that does not seem like a Miranda game.
It looks so cool. Like, if you just have good aesthetics for your game, I just click with it. And so the thing is, it's a top-down driving game as well. And they describe it as a retro Americana graphical style. Just look at this game for just 2 seconds and tell me you're not intrigued by it. Because the style, the animation, just beautiful. So that's one that I'm really looking forward to as well.
That is great stuff. Yeah, there's that's the best part. Like, I still think we need Live Arcade back and have a curated Live Arcade Wednesday. Not that all these other games don't come out, but that they spotlight the best stuff. Because it's just the trying to sift through and find the diamonds in the rough is not easy. Destin.
There's so much on game. Sorry, there's no, so much ahead. On Games Pass too that are just fantastic little gems that sometimes you'll just stumble across and be like, dang, why didn't nobody tell me about this? And I think the ID at Xbox, not the ID at Xbox Twitter, but that one too, and the Game Pass Twitter do a good job sometimes of featuring different games that are coming out, but not necessarily giving them that spotlight that you're talking about, Ryan. And I do want them to do that more.
Destin, what jumped out at you here?
Yeah, well, to your point and to Miranda's point, I do want to say that back in November, Phil Spencer said Game Pass is about getting games into production, and I'm paraphrasing here, that don't fit on an Excel spreadsheet in terms of profits, right? And that's why we're getting all these inventive, new, sort of experimental things. It does really feel like Summer of Arcade, or that's what it was called, Ryan, back in the day, right?
Oh, yes.
And it does sort of have that feeling, and just by word of mouth, you get those standouts. The one that I've seen everybody talking about, and I have actually come around on, is The Ascent, right? The Ascent, this trailer really, really sold me. I think they did a really, really good job of showcasing how they're going to handle the storytelling, how they're going to continually be breaking up that perspective. Like, they walk by this window at one point, and you can actually see the depth of the world. They've spent so much time on the design and the iteration of this world and showing you that how alive it is. It was really, really impressive. They even snuck in a shot with ray tracing and puddles on the ground when the characters like walk into the scene. And it's really silly, but during the combat, there was this one scene where a bomb detonation goes off and there was ground deformation that was just like really, really impressive to me. And I'm like, oh, that's really, really interesting. So Ascent is now on my list officially. And there's the ray tracing shot, by the way. So yeah, really, really cool game. Moonglow Bay, I'm on the same board with you, Ryan, on that one. So Moonglow Bay is a Canada lore-based game where, if I understand correctly, the fish are manifestations of nightmares that people had about what they would encounter in the wild. And it seems like it's just done by two people who they interviewed during the ID at Xbox thing. And then just going down the list, there's so much I could go over. Like,
I've decided or I've realized something about myself, and that chill voxel based like colorful adventure-y kind of games are totally my jam, because this game jumped out at me. I love the demo for Echo Generation, which was featured as well, and The Tourist, which launched, which, you know, has been out on multiple platforms, but I played it as an Xbox Series X launch title. I love that game. So voxel-based adventure chill games, I'm all in.
Yeah, you know, I have to just mention Stalker 2. We just saw some guns and some of the character stuff where they were changing out his teeth. You, but also cool. They've done a lot of tech demo. I want to see more about the game and what the playability of that product is actually like. And here's the interview where they kind of talk about some of the engine stuff that's going on. You know, we've seen the world stuff. They showed weaponry and then they showed the teeth things, but I'm going to go on to another one. Sorry, producer, but Astria Ascending, it's like a JRPG that's being done by by the Final Fantasy composer and Final Fantasy 12 designer, Kazushige Nojima and Hitoshi Sakamoto, who Sakamoto-san worked on Final Fantasy 12 and Vagrant Story, and Nojima-san worked on Final Fantasy 7 and Final Fantasy 10 in terms of writing. So really, really excited about that one. It has a really unique, pretty art style. And I have to give props, Ryan, yes, I'm on the same board of 12 Minutes. A few that aren't on the Game Pass deal, or at least that I don't know of, I don't think 12 Minutes is. XO1, it's like this super chill game where you're like an orb, and then you turn into a discus, and you have to like traverse the land like that. They have a really long gameplay demo on YouTube you can watch. And Lost Eidolons, last one, not Game Pass as far as I know, it's an RPG strategy game from Ocean Drive Studios. Off. Yeah, it looks like a Final Fantasy Tactics top-down thing. So think Fire Emblem, but like super high fidelity graphics and a compelling story. The storytelling looks really interesting on that one. So I was really, really, really hyped hyped up by this conference as somebody that, you know, studied game design, was in the Independent Game Developers Association. I actually really love the ID at Xbox program and getting to see really young developers who are just trying out crazy ideas be supported. And, you know, Phil talked about sometimes they want their production costs covered, and we're starting to see the results, the early results of what that means when they've made agreements to help out smaller developers make these creations. So I'm really excited.
Cam, how about you? What were your highlights?
Yeah, so like looking at the like list of games that are coming to Game Pass and some that I already knew about. No. You'd like outside of Astria Ascending, all the other ones I was going to talk about hasn't been mentioned yet. So, but yeah, Astria Ascending, I was like, oh, Final Fantasy Veterans, I'm sold. That's all you got to say. And then also really looking forward to Backbone. That is, I played that back during PAX West 2019. That's from a Russian team, I believe, and it's basically you play as a detective raccoon, and all of humanity are animals, and it's a noir type game, and it has a really beautiful pixel art. It looks really, really great. I was like sold on that game the moment I played it at PAX West, and then one of my favorite or most anticipated games this year, like above any game, is She Dreams Elsewhere. That's primarily being made by one dev, Davion Gooden, and it is basically a mixture. I think Miranda would specifically really like this game. It's like a mixture of Undertale, Persona 5, and like Earthbound, and it has really, really great music. Really well written. Very, very great game. I'm super excited for that game, and I can't wait for that to come out as well.
Great stuff. Yeah. I was thrilled to see, as I mentioned, 12 minutes. I think that's probably my number one most anticipated ID at Xbox game personally. And it there was an interview with the lead developer after they showed the trailer. He made it sound like, I mean, this is just me sussing out. He didn't mention any specifics, but he basically said it's done. They're just polishing it. I'm thinking it's going to be out by the summer based on the way he phrased it. And they also said this coming year. Soon. Yeah, he said this year, but I think it's going to probably be the summer just based on he was saying that. I can't remember exactly what he said, but it was along the lines of it's all content complete. They're just polishing it up, just, you know, doing QA. So I'm hoping, I mean, as we're sitting here at the end of March, I'm hoping it's going to make the summer months because, you know, that's a game that deserves some spotlight without all the big fall games hogging all the spotlight. So really eager to see that one. The one notable omission, there were so many great games in this. And I know it's hard to complain. It's such a like horrible gamer thing to do of like, here's 80 great games. But there was I want to talk about the one that wasn't there. But it was a bummer not to see Tunic. No Tunic at this, yes, which is
hurt.
Along with 12 minutes, probably my most anticipated Xbox indie game. And we know that's a one person effort primarily. And I did get an update, like an exclusive little update for IGN right at the end of the year. We posted it in December, a new screenshot and a little quote from that developer whose name, sadly, like an idiot, I didn't write down. But basically, you know, it's in progress. But clearly, he either, you know, was not ready to show new stuff or didn't want to take the time to put together a trailer and instead chose to make that time, use that time to keep working on the game. But yeah, so much good stuff here. 22 of the games that were of the 60 something games that were at this event, 22 of them are launching directly into Game Pass. I'll just give you the list real quick. Some of them you heard the panel talk about already. Art of the Rally, Astria Ascending, Backbone, Boyfriend Dungeon, Craftopia, Dead Static Drive, Edge of Eternity, Hello Neighbor 2, which that trailer popped off on IGN. Clearly a lot of interest there. Library of Ruina, Little Witch in the Woods, Moonglow Bay, Narita Boy, Nobody Saves the World, Omno, Recompile, Sable, which we've seen before. That looks really cool. She Dreams Elsewhere, which Cam mentioned. Stalker 2, that's a massive get right there. The Ascent, which you heard Destin talk about. Undungeon, Way to the Woods, and Wild at Heart that Miranda mentioned as well. So all those straight into Game Pass. That's so, if you even like a quarter of those, you've got, they're all just in Game Pass. They're just there for you, and the rest you can try out. So amazing stuff, incredible progress this year. I mean, this week's Podcast Unlocked is brought to you by NordVPN. Hey, if you're watching a lot of sports like me and you hate blackouts, NordVPN is a great way to go. You can use NordVPN, a virtual private network, to watch live sporting events, TV shows, films that aren't available in your region by switching your virtual location to a country that is showing that event. No more blackouts. It's also good for plenty of other stuff, like protecting your private data, your bank details, your passwords, your online identity. You can protect your data while you're traveling and using public Wi-Fi. NordVPN protects you wherever you are in the world. NordVPN threat protection also protects you from viruses, malware, and phishing sites. NordVPN is also the fastest VPN in the world. No buffering or lagging while you're streaming, and it will stop your ISP bandwidth throttling. NordVPN is the price of a cup of coffee a month, so that is a super affordable, great way to go. To get the best discount off of your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/unlocked without the E. That's nordvpn.com/unlocked. And that'll give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. And best of all, there's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. NordVPN.com/unlocked without the E.
Anna Sheridan, missing for nearly 6 months now.
I need you to find me.
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.
Like 2021, guys, really feels like 2020 Game Pass was awesome and totally worth having. But I feel like the punches, like Microsoft just keeps firing off Game Pass announcements, and we're only 3 months into 2021. It just seems like the hits just keep coming.
Yep. There's already so much. I've already heard of Genesis Noir. That's a game people have started talking about that's on Game Pass that I just downloaded recently and wanted to jump into. There's always something on Game Pass to play, which it sounds like a weird tagline, but it's quite true. There's always a new game out, and you're like, oh, I guess I'm going to write this on the to-do list excitedly.
There's always something new to play. Yeah, just throw the announcer voice on it and call it a marketing campaign. You're done. You've got it. All right. Next up this week, a very interesting rumor that certainly surprised me. Maybe part of it did and part of it didn't. I want to hear everybody's thoughts on this. This year's Call of Duty game, yes, I know, shocking, there will be a Call of Duty game released this year, is rumored to be called Call of Duty World War II Vanguard, and it will be made, apparently, by Sledgehammer. So Eurogamer has corroborated elements of a report from the Call of Duty fan site Modern Warzone, which came from earlier in the week, claiming that Call of Duty 2021's working title is Call of Duty World War II Vanguard and is being developed by Sledgehammer Games. Eurogamer says that Activision plans to, quote, stick with the Vanguard subtitle for the final version, but Eurogamer disagreeing with Modern Warzone's claim that the game takes place in an alternate timeline where 1945 wasn't the end of World War II. And instead, Eurogamer, through their sources, believe Vanguard has a traditional World War II setting. So I, for one, am not surprised that there's going to be another Call of Duty World War II game, but I am surprised that Sledgehammer's back in the driver's seat, because from the Jason Schreier reports over the last, year and a half, that studio had seemingly lost so many people, and they were supposed to do last year's game, and it got pulled, and went on to, of course, was handed to Treyarch for Black Ops Cold War and Raven. But yeah, I mean, guys, are you surprised that Sledgehammer's back here? I'll start with Cam.
It's kind of, I feel like it might be a little bit complicated, especially just not knowing the exact details, because, you know, Treyarch was like next in line for their Call of Duty, and then I think they had like team help with the finish out the development of Black Ops Cold War. I'm pretty sure.
Right, Raven did the campaign.
Yeah. Raven, it was Raven. Yeah. Yeah, okay, that's what I thought. So, but this time around, it's like, well, Infinity War just kind of finished their game, so there's, I don't think that they're going to, even with Ravensoft's help, like they would be able to get a game out in time. I feel like Sledgehammer would be closer in that scenario than Infinity Ward. So maybe they are releasing it and there's going to be some cutbacks. Maybe the campaign will be relatively short like Cold War's campaign was. But it's one of those things that I'm glad, like a lot of people didn't really like World War II, but you know, Sledgehammer's last game, but I really liked it. I enjoyed the campaign. I actually enjoyed the multiplayer. It was like the first time I kind of tried out the multiplayer in a long time. And I think that it's going, like, I'm cool with more World War II shooters because, you know, we don't get Brothers in Arms anymore, which I was a really big fan of, and I'm not a big Battlefield person. So I'm looking forward to, you know, I'm cool with like every 3 years we're getting a new World War II.
Yeah, and now we seem to be, as that's a great point, we seem to now be back on the 3 year cycle for Call of Duty games that was seemingly interrupted there. I mean, it was with Black Ops coming out, a Cold War coming out 2 years after Black Ops 4. But yes, that's now if Sledgehammer's back in there, then it should rotate. And then so it'd be 2022 next year would be Modern Warfare's turn again, would be Infinity Ward's turn. Before I go to our resident Call of Duty expert and super fan Miranda Sanchez, I do want to hear from Destin on this.
Yeah, what's your question specifically? Because concept-wise, I'm down with both concepts. But if you want me to talk about Sledgehammer, let me know.
Well, either one. Yeah, I'm just. Are you surprised that Sledgehammer's, you know, back in the driver's seat after they'd been, you know, kind of pulled off of it last year? And are you? Do you want to see them go back to World War II? It was interesting to see. Cam is fully on board for more World War II shooters. And how do you feel about it? Are you kind of tired of them? Or are you ready for more?
Yeah, so to answer your first question, I think maybe Sledgehammer got the break that they needed, or they've been able to work on this and create a product that they're proud of. So I'm glad to see them back. Hopefully, you know, they have the appropriate staff to wrap up this Call of Duty. And as for concept, I'm absolutely down for more people attempting to do a World War II story. And if it does happen to be a concept where World War II never ended or alternate futures type thing, I'd be really, really interested in seeing how they decide to experiment with that sort of option. Call of Duty gets a lot of flack from people online because it's iterative, you know, it's like the same thing every year. But there's a lot of fans out there that aren't just exhausted by the Call of Duty franchise. It's still one of the biggest sellers every year. So
the biggest,
they're doing something right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And I'm always curious to see what a developer will do in terms of storytelling, in terms of how they change up the game design. And yeah, I'm down to see both, honestly, like no real shade to either concept.
Yeah. So if this proves out to be true, it will be 4 years since Sledgehammer's last game, which was Call of Duty World War II. In that time, I mean, we had Michael Condrey and Glenn Schofield, the two co-founders and heads of the studio, both left, and they're both doing separate things now. A lot of senior staff, I know, went with Condrey. I'm not sure how many, if Glenn took some folks over to his, because his studio, I can't remember the name of it, but it's under the PUBG banner. He's doing a single player PUBG universe thing. So, you know, there's still certainly talent at Sledgehammer, but they lost a lot of folks at the top. Miranda, how do you feel about the return of World War II and the return of Sledgehammer back into the mix as far as the development roster for Call of Duty?
There will always be stories to tell within World War II. I think even though we know a lot of the big stories that have come out with big perspectives, I think World War II from Sledgehammer previously told like kind of like the Americans' perspective, the idea, but then they also shifted perspectives really well. And I think that was kind of a proving ground of saying there's a lot to tell here, and we're only diving into like little snippets from different people while focusing on one character and passing the baton, essentially. And I really liked that, and I hope we get to see them do a bit more of it. I'm not sure where they go narratively, just because there are so many options again. And I kind of hope they get to tell more of those untold stories, right? Like, there's so much in history that you can dig into. And I think it'd be nice to see them dig into a very personal experience as they can. And I'm also, of course, down for the alternate history of what if this happened? I think you can play that game forever. And it's usually going to be a fun game. And by the game, I mean that what if game.
Yeah.
We all know this one. We do it in our heads.
Miranda, how would you feel if it was a drastic departure from the feel of Call of Duty games? Do you think they would ever do that?
No.
And yeah.
No.
Okay. Well, what if they did? Yeah. How would you feel? Would it just be a no for you?
It wouldn't be a no. I think it depends. There are things that I go to Call of Duty for that I know I will get every single time. And I think that's what people look for when they go to Call of Duty. Each of the studios has their own flavor of that, whether it comes down to like the time to kill, just like, I think the simplicity, not so I don't want to say it's a simple system for their gunplay, but it's very straightforward and it's easy to understand. And I think they've always strived to have that very readable, very understandable jump in. You can be a one-man army. You don't have to work with your teammates. You probably should, but you really don't have to. And that's something I've always enjoyed about Call of Duty. And I think with Sledgehammer in particular, what I liked about World War II, when I think back on it, I liked how they were trying different things. So in that one, we got headquarters, which was their social space. And you just kind of got to run around and like call in your loot box, essentially, and just see what other people got. And like, oh, what did you get? That's kind of cool. There's like a theater space. There's a place where you could go play retro games. There's a 1v1 area, which is just the best. That was just hilarious to me. And it would change over time. So I kind of liked having that space, even though it's not meant to be a huge social game. It's just kind of a fun place to go hang out in if you just need to cool down from a few tense matches or something like that. I also really liked War, which was a special mode that they had in there. But one of the things that really stood out to me in World War II's from the past was the zombies, because it felt a lot more horror than I think most zombies we get. Sometimes it feels very arcadey or just goofy, and there's an appreciation for that. But I actually really loved how freaked out I got by it. And so I'm kind of curious to see if they will take that sort of gritty approach to their World War II story continuing forward. And I do hope that they keep with that. One note on staffing for Sledgehammer, which is kind of a problem for me, but also an exciting problem, is when you have friends who go on to go do really cool things in the industry, you're like, yay, but also like, dang it. So speaking of staffing, Ryan, you're saying like, oh yeah, like a lot of people left. I've definitely noticed a lot of people getting hired at Sledgehammer. One of those who just announced hers, this is big, exciting, Alexa Ray Correa. So she used to work at GameSpot, a very good friend of mine, and now she's a narrative designer at Sledgehammer. So guess who will not be reviewing that? But I'm very excited to see what they do with this new direction and a lot of new talent. I think even though whenever we see big departures from studios, it is a bit scary. But at the same time, it's exciting because it's this studio's chance to do a new first impression, right, with the new team that they have. And you get to see their vision going forward. And we can only hope the best at that point.
Yeah, that's go figure. So this is twice in one episode where Miranda Sanchez has expressed enthusiasm over the horror element of a game. Is this a new Miranda?
I have been playing a lot of horror games recently with a friend. She's very brave. And I was like, oh, I guess I'll play with you. So I've been kind of more interested in horror things lately, I guess you could say.
Excellent. Well, yeah, for me, I mean, I liked Call of Duty World War II. And let me clarify, I only play the campaigns. I'm totally out of the multiplayer for Call of Duty. It's, you know, I'm retired. My Call of Duty multiplayer career is over. I've retired. But so I'm only coming at this in talking about the campaign. I thought it was good, but I feel like it missed a chance near the end of the game to really make a statement or educate the player, do a better job of educating. Like, all right, it's spoiler, whatever. It's been 4 years. You basically walk through an empty concentration camp at the end of the game. And to me, that, like, I get where they were trying to go with it emotionally. I don't think they did a great job of of getting there. I thought that they could have, that mission could have been, it could have gone farther, not in terms of like showing any atrocities or anything like that. I'm not saying that, but just as far as trying to educate players and about like, you know, really what happened and what, and why this is, why we should never forget this. But instead it was just sort of this like zero combat walk through this empty space. So, but overall the campaign was good. For me, I still think Call of Duty 2 is the best of the World War II Call of Duties. I don't think
agree.
That's been my favorite over the years, but yeah, I guess I don't know where I'd want them to go, but I'm not inherently excited for another World War II game. I guess I'm differing from you guys on that, but
I wouldn't say I'm necessarily thrilled we're getting another World War II game. I'm just, it's inevitable. We will go back to World War II time and time again. So I'm just more curious of what they're going to do that puts this apart from everything else that's already been done.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll see. I mean, they've had an extra year, even though they've clearly battled a lot of staff turnover in that time. I mean, it's not the first time that Call of Duty has weathered a significant staffing change. Of course, when Vince and Jason and half the original Infinity Ward team left during Modern Warfare 3 and went and formed Respawn, that was, ironically, Sledgehammer was the one that came in, and they stopped development on the third-person action-adventure Call of Duty game that they were developing to help to finish Modern Warfare 3 on time. And now it's come full circle. Somebody had, you know, Treyarch had to come in and pick up for them, and now they're back in the fold. So yeah, we'll see what happens
Call of Duty,
here.
It's time. Come on, Sledgehammer.
Yeah, we'll see how things unfold here this year for Call of Duty. Other than it's death, taxes, and a new Call of Duty game every fall. So you can definitely count on it coming. No matter who's making it, somebody's making it, and it's happening. All right, next topic this week, Cyberpunk 2077. I actually have to glance over at my notes here because this was right before the story broke, right before we recorded. So we're at the point now. CD Projekt has acquired a new Canadian studio to be basically CD Projekt Red Vancouver, but they are also preparing to shift gears for future AAA projects and work on games in both The Witcher and Cyberpunk franchises simultaneously beginning next year. During a strategy update presentation for their shareholders, CD Projekt outlined how it's going to achieve its goals to develop two AAA games in two different franchises simultaneously, saying it intends to staff up over the next year and have development teams working on both projects at once, including leads. It's also planning to adjust the capabilities of its internal game engine to allow features like NPC routines and player character control to be adapted in multiple games at once. Now, the next part of this, there's a quote. Hang on. The thing I wanted to get to was, where's this multiplayer bit? See, this is what I get for things breaking late.
Control F was.
Hold on. Here we go. The studio president, Adam Kaczynski, said the studio was adjusting its strategy around online experiences in its games, saying it was focusing on bringing online into all its franchises one day and working on an online tech, blah, blah, blah. However, here we go. Previously, we hinted that our next AAA would be a multiplayer Cyberpunk game, but we have decided to reconsider this plan given our new, more systemic and agile approach. Instead of primarily focusing on the big online experience or game, we are focusing on bringing online into all of our franchises one day. So, clearly they had Grand Theft Auto Online kind of aspirations, right? We knew that they were developing this big multiplayer suite that I'm sure they had intended to live on for years and years and make the money in the same way that Rockstar does with GTA Online. Sounds like that might not be the case anymore, Destin.
Yeah, it seems like some major kerfluffle happened when they launched a new IP or something. I don't know. they have just been through the ringer for the last year, somewhat deservedly so, for the marketing of the previous gen consoles. Glad to see that they're adjusting that. I don't think it should have taken fans being outraged basically to make that call. I think they should have just been more transparent from the get-go, and they could have avoided a lot of these troubles. But yeah, looking forward, maybe we don't get a Cyberpunk multiplayer world that we hoped. I'm curious how they're going to be bringing it to all of their properties. That's interesting. I don't really know what to think about this. It's good that they've expanded. It sounds like they needed the support based on what we've heard about what's going on behind the scenes. So I hope this works out for the best in the end.
Cam, were you looking forward to a multiplayer Cyberpunk? Is that a thing you even wanted, or would you rather them just, you know, kind of set that aside and move on to more single player stuff in both universes?
I mean, leading up to Cyberpunk, I was excited for it when it eventually came, but like now that I'm just waiting for the next gen patch to come out to actually play Cyberpunk, it's kind of up in the air, you know. I think CD Projekt Red makes great single player games. And I think that they should stick with that. But if they have, like, you know, with picking up this new team, like if they can somehow double dip and manage both without tarnishing another, then you know, by all means, go for it. But I think that at the end of the day, they should focus on what they do best.
Yeah, on popular opinion, I actually really love the storytelling in Cyberpunk. I think there's some really, really great narrative design in the game. And Cam, to just point out to you, maybe, the 1.2 patch was sort of part of this story. The 1.2 patch came out yesterday. Yeah. And console users are reporting a better performance. We have a project in the works right now where we're going to take a deeper look at that. But yeah, it sounds like consoles are running better.
Yeah, Destin, they had previously announced that there would be a major patch in, I think, February and March. Is this the first of those, or was there another one in February?
This is their first mega patch, okay. And it was because of the hack that happened,
right,
where they were just massively compromised and they had to sort of reset and reevaluate. And they, right, like, nobody deserved that, like, regardless of what happened. That should not have happened. And it's really, really unfortunate. And I'm glad that it's out. And that we got our first mega patch, and we'll get another one soon. But everything has shifted now. All the DLCs have shifted. Everything shifted.
Miranda, where are you with this and the sort of the future of Cyberpunk and what they and what CD Projekt should be learning and applying to their future projects?
I think for me, when it comes to CD Projekt Red, I just take it one step at a time. I was fortunate to not experience any major bugs whenever I played Cyberpunk on PC. I had a great time with it. I love being in Night City. Honestly, just watching the video that we're watching now, if you're watching the video version, it just makes me sort of miss Night City a bit. And I kind of want to jump back into it, but kind of like Cam, I've been waiting for the next gen patch so I can go play on my nice 4K OLED TV that I bought for this. And that I was not just for this, but you know, I was like, oh, so excited for it. Just sort of waiting. And I think it's good that they're starting to talk a little bit more about the future of CD Projekt Red as a whole, just because obviously the whole launch of Cyberpunk cast a lot of doubt on what they could do. I mean, yes, Witcher 3 was fantastic. Yes, Cyberpunk was great for some people, for some players, but that's not what you want to see from a studio that you were betting so much on. And it's very much comes down to leadership not giving their team the time they needed to make and finish the game that they really wanted to make. And it is such a shame. So them having that transparency and saying, hey, we're refocusing on how we develop games, we're just doing all these big changes. And, you know, online was definitely the stretch goal for Cyberpunk. It's one day, you know, sometime. I think that is the right call to make, because right now I'm just waiting for the console patches. I want my next gen update, and I'm just waiting for the DLC. And so I think taking it one step at a time with this company, especially given, you know, the history at this point, is really the best we can do for them. But it is good, again, that they are being at least somewhat transparent and saying this is how we're retooling and how we're going to keep focusing going forward.
Yeah, I mean, it's clear. It is. You bring up a good point that CD Projekt has. They were a studio that had as far as the bigger studios in the industry, they probably had one of the largest reservoirs of community goodwill from The Witcher 3 and all the free DLCs they did for that and the couple of excellent deep expansion packs that they did for that. They had an incredible reserve of goodwill, and they burned it all and then some with CD Projekt, with Cyberpunk 2077. And so, you know, clearly, I mean, I know they've put out announcements saying that it still sold, you know, a few million copies or whatever in the beginning. But the fact is, there was another report today, it's been 100 days that the game has not been available for sale on the PlayStation Store, which is the number one, you know, hey, we're here on an Xbox podcast, but PlayStation's still the king. So that's just a lot of people that you cannot sell to on a digital storefront. So I don't think I think it's very reasonable to say, even without me having access to their books, that they have not made nearly as much money as they anticipated they would so far on Cyberpunk 2077. And as such, I'm sure that's probably a big factor in their change of plans here, where rather than keep all their eggs in the Cyberpunk basket and say, all right, well, now we're going to do a, you know, long tail GTA Online like AAA multiplayer experience for this severely public PR damaged thing that is Cyberpunk for now, that they went, maybe we should fast track Witcher again and get back into that game as soon as we possibly can. So I think that clearly must factor in as well.
Yeah, I think we just posted something on Twitter, like it's been a month or longer that it's been off the store. That's 114 million PS4s don't have ability to access it digitally. And as of February, we know there's 4.5 million PS5s in the wild. So you're talking about 118.5 million devices that can't buy your game.
Well, that's digitally, right? They could still go to the store if they want it, yes. But yeah, it's not there conveniently in their house.
Yeah, with COVID, the number of people going to physical stores to buy media has to be declined drastically. So it has to be a devastating blow for them financially.
But yeah, I think Miranda, you hit it on the nail on the head too. It's one step at a time, and they need to think that way, not just like us perceiving them, but it's important, I think, for them to just take things one step at a time and sort of show that they, you know, to try and get some of that goodwill back. I mean, we've seen what that company can be, both in terms of a game developer and a community friendly developer that does put out great extra content. So, you know, they have it in them to get back to that, but it's going to be a long road for them. The Cyberpunk launch it was basically their Xbox One unveiling moment, right? Where it just, they dug a massive hole that will take them a long, long time to dig out of. But like Xbox, like they can do it. They can do it. So, and here's hoping they will. Not super great news for this next story, but it'll end well, hopefully. Turtle Rock has announced that Back for Blood has been delayed. It was penciled in for June 22nd. It was going to be a summer game this year. They have moved it out a handful of months to October 12th to 2021, still this year. There will still be an open beta this summer, though. They posted up saying, quote, Turtle Rock Studios is working hard to make Back for Blood the best game it can possibly be at launch, and the team needs more time to do this. Therefore, we will release Back for Blood on October 12th. We thank our community for its continued support and are excited to share there will be an open beta this summer. We say this every single time. It's fine. We just listed like 6,000 ID at Xbox games that looked really interesting. So there'll be plenty of stuff to play. Nobody here is upset about this delay, correct?
Of course not.
No.
Yeah.
I think it's a smart one too, because they're releasing it nearby Halloween time, so people are going to want to get games like that. again, I played the alpha back in January, late December or something like that. Yeah. And that was probably like the best shape I've seen a game in during an alpha phase ever. So I am going to speak very highly of this game, like leading up to launch. Like, I'm incredibly excited. If you like Left 4 Dead, well, this is for you, baby. Like, it's going to be really, really good.
Cam, were you able to make it all the way to the end of the mission in any of the times you played?
No, I didn't. Because, yeah, that last section is rough. But like, it is very hard. But, man, it, like, it's great. And it really is, like, Left 4 Dead 3 to me. Like, yes, they make some mechanical changes with the card system, which I think is really, really cool. And the copper where you buy your upgrades and things like that. But, like, the shooting is definitely a huge step up from Left 4 Dead 2. The variety of weapons is great. And I think, like, as the game goes along, they're going to add more, like, basically characters. Like, they don't do anything specifically, but it's just you get that diversity and representation there, which is really, really great. I'm super excited. I really can't wait for Back 4 Blood. It's definitely one of my most anticipated games.
Whose gameplay is this?
Oh, go ahead.
Is this ours?
What?
Is this our gameplay? Because they keep shooting their teammates.
And oh, is that why you were laughing?
In front of me.
Yeah.
But anyway, this game looks awesome. Like, look at the big pile of dead zombies, right? Like,
I'm gonna blame. Really, I think really this cool. might have been. I'm gonna throw him under the bus. I think this might have been John Ryan because he did the original. He's not here to defend himself.
JR, come on. But anyway, it looks awesome.
This is not it's watching. I highly recommend you give this segment a little bit of a watch. It's a fun thing to watch if you haven't seen the game yet. I also like how it calls out who triggered the alarm. It's like, hey, yeah. Is this person's fault?
Yeah, I'm with all of you. I also played the alpha. I also could not totally finish it. Got just right up to that last section on the boat and got overwhelmed. But man, is it fun. And I agree completely, Cam. It is Left 4 Dead 3. I mean, it's not even trying to hide that with the title and the structure. I mean, it really, really is that. And it shows me that the Left 4 Dead formula from 10 years ago? Wait, Left 4 Dead?
2008.
There still has to be a huge community
one, right?
Behind Left 4 Dead, right?
2000, geez. So, gosh, 12 going on 13 years. It's the formula still works. It's still fun. It's still a super
all
fun
just
game.
Like, when did Left 4 Dead come out?
No, I think you're right. And Left 4 Dead 2 was very un-Valve-like. It was 1 year later. Like, they turned the second one around a year later.
Yeah.
29,310 people are playing Left 4 Dead 2 today.
Still? Wow. Yeah. That tells you there is still an
that's
audience.
That's more than
this.
Avengers.
Well, oh my gosh, Justin.
Wow, just like 100 times more or something. Avengers has 2,000.
Is there a dead horse in your living room that you're beating right now? Like, geez, man. Oh, poor Avengers. But
dear.
Yeah, this looks great. Totally don't mind it being kicked out to October. Cam, I hadn't even thought about the Halloween angle. That's that should serve them well. Now, the other group that's probably happy about this delay, even if not, it's not necessarily like a direct impact thing, but, you know, we just got done with our IGN first month on Aliens Fireteam, which is 3-player. It's third person. You know, it's not a complete like one-to-one thing, but they are sort of on the same branch of the shooter tree, I would say. And yeah, Aliens Fireteam, they're due out in the summer, though they haven't yet given a date. So if they're able to get out in the summer, then they'll kind of have that first mover advantage and maybe get out there before Back 4 Blood comes in and perhaps were to get some of that audience. Because, you know, these kind of games, you tend to, if people really get into Back 4 Blood, they might go, oh, Aliens, okay, I'm going to keep playing Back 4 Blood. I mean, it never hurts to be the first one out when you're in a similar genre, similar kind of game. But we'll see what happens with both of those. But
Not going to lie, this is making me so bad want to download Left 4 Dead.
Yeah. And it's doing its job, right? I think it's mission accomplished if that's exactly the way it's making you feel right now. It's making me wish that this alpha were still running because...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't wait for the beta.
It's really good.
Yeah. When the beta comes out, I'm probably like going to drop everything and just play this as much as I can just to get my, like, you know, my fill-in until October.
All right, we've got plenty of time left in the show here. There are plenty more topics I want to go next to this more good Xbox news. You will no longer need Xbox Live Gold to access party chat, looking for groups, and free-to-play multiplayer features on Xbox. This news was revealed by a developer from the Xbox preview program named Brad Rossetti, who posted, "Multiplayer in free-to-play games, looking for groups, and party chat on Xbox no longer requires an Xbox Live Gold membership." It's rolled out now. If you're wondering, how do I get this right now? The changes are being debuted to insiders in the alpha skip ahead and alpha programs at the moment. So it's in the insider ring. It's going to make its way out to everybody. But this I wanted to mention because this is Microsoft keeping a promise here. It sort of was a good thing that came out of a bad thing. If you remember the 24-hour debacle that was the doubling of Xbox Live Gold's price that was walked back within 20, not even, it was within like 9 hours. It was within the same business day. And in that, they had said, oh, by the way, we'll get rid of the whole, gold requirement for free-to-play multiplayer games. So, but they didn't put a date on it. They just said, we're going to do that. Well, now they've done it and in the not-too-distant future. So I'm really happy to see that. Cam?
It's about bleeping time, you know what I'm saying? It's just like, yeah, party chat, like all these type of features should have been free, like for honestly from the get-go, like in hindsight, hindsight's 2020, but it's good. Like it's good. There's nothing to say outside of it's good. Like I'm glad it's happening. Been way too long for this to happen, and I'm glad that everyone people still have to get Xbox Live Gold, obviously, to play online, unless it's a free-to-play game. But it is just something that, you don't have to worry about it if you're low on funds and you can't play online. You're, only playing your free-to-play games. And even for free-to-play people, if you only play, Fortnite, I know people that, have consoles and basically only play free-to-play games. And this is great for them. They don't have to buy Xbox Live Gold to play the games online, and they can still chat with their friends without being in game chat. It's great.
Yeah, Miranda, this is probably good news for the Call of Duty Warzones of the world, Fortnites. I'm trying to think of who are the other sort of big free to play ones.
Yep. I mean, it just makes sense at this point. It's silly that if I can hop on a computer and download a game and play for free and not have to pay for some online thing because the game is supposed to be free, that you can't do the same on your Xbox. So about time.
All right. The BAFTA Awards. Oh, do you want to weigh in, Destin? Want to get in on this?
Apex, Warzone, Fortnite, Destiny 2, Killer Instinct, Rocket League, Rainbow Six. You can't quite get access right now because this is only in the Alpha Skip Ahead Insider Program. So get in the Insider Program, you just install the app, and then you got to sign up for the Alpha Skip Ahead to get into it early. But I have to imagine this is them looking at their services that are locked behind Xbox Live Gold, listening to the community and saying, that's a mistake. We're going to fix it right now. And they're doing it as quickly as they can. And they probably gave Brad Rossetti permission to post this, obviously, because they want to say, hey, yeah, we're working on it. And I really love this sort of transparency about reversing stuff that is just odd, right? It doesn't really make sense. Why can't I use Party Chat without Xbox Live? It's strange. It's a service that just should be a part of a gaming console in 2021,
And so it shall be done. So good stuff from Microsoft on this. The BAFTA Awards, British Gaming Awards, that are generally sort of the more serious awards that are handed out amongst the game industry every year. They have been announced as follows. I can run down the quick list and see if anybody wants to comment on any of these. Best game went to Hades, matching IGN. We also named Hades our game of the year. Best British game, because it is the British Gaming Awards, went to Sackboy. Animation went to Last of Us Part 2. Artistic achievement, Hades once again. Audio achievement, Ghost of Tsushima. Best debut game, Carrion. Which is super. I still need to play that. That's one of those Devolver delicacies that fits right in. We talked about Annapurna last week being kind of having that eye for curation. Devolver, I think, Miranda, you had mentioned it last week, is really good at it too. And Carry On is one of those games where you're just a raging, like, tentacled monster that's moving through is it fair to call it a platforming space or more of like a side-scrolling action space, where you're just like menacing the people you encounter?
Yeah, I think you're like a monster that's escaping from a lab.
That's it. Thank you. Yeah, I got to play that one.
So I think best... that has more of a platforming feel to it. Sorry.
No worries. Best evolving game, Sea of Thieves. Best family game, again, Sackboy. Game Beyond Entertainment goes to Animal Crossing New Horizons. Best game design, Hades Once More. Best multiplayer, Animal Crossing. Best music, Spider-Man Miles Morales. Definitely don't argue with that one. Narrative, Hades. Again, clean it up here. Best original property, Kentucky Route Zero TV edition. Hasn't Kentucky Route Zero actually been out in parts for years? But all right, it's the final release. Best performer in a leading role, Laura Bailey as Abby in The Last of Us Part Two. Best performer in a supporting role, Logan Cunningham as Hades, Achilles, Poseidon, Asterius, Sharon, and the storyteller in Hades, wearing many, many hats there. And the public EE Game of the Year, the public vote went to The Last of Us Part Two. Miranda, what jumps out at you from this list, or any big head scratching omissions or snubs?
I'm gonna play Hades. That's all I gotta say. I don't know. Every word system, they of course have their own criteria. It's cool to see Carry On get a shout out. I actually haven't played that, but I did manage our guide writer who worked on that, so I kind of have an inkling of what it is. It looked pretty cool, so nice to see that get a shout out. I was surprised multiplayer game went to Animal Crossing, although I'm not mad about it. I loved Animal Crossing. I mean, I still love Animal Crossing. I'm looking at my Switch right now. I was playing it yesterday. So I think it's cool to have that as a nice one, especially with the pandemic. I think a lot of us gathered through Animal Crossing, and it was just a nice space to hold actual birthday parties and stuff when you couldn't do that, you know, normally.
Yeah.
You can't do that in Halo. I mean, you could, but no, you can't.
Well,
you can't work
there is
nets.
The grunt birthday party skull you could turn on.
That is true, and it
just
should
go around
be
shooting
on.
Grunts.
It's always on.
And then every always day's on. Party.
Go ahead, please.
That's it for me. Oh, that was it for me.
Destin, how about you?
Yeah, nothing weird or nothing jumps out at me here. But if there was a technical achievement, I have to give the nod to a PlayStation game. Marvel's Spider-Man Miles Morales did so much cool stuff with the technology this last year, especially as a launch game that's launching on old hardware and new hardware at the same time. They just updated it today where the musculature actually affects the suit of your system. Ooh. And they just keep doing cool stuff with that engine. I am blown away by what Marvel Spider-Man Miles Morales has been able to accomplish technically. And
my 2 cents. I played with ray tracing on for that game, and it was beautiful on PS5. Loved it.
Yeah.
Cam, how about you? Any snubs? Any of these that you're happy to pump your fist and celebrate?
No Final Fantasy VII Remake love. That makes me sad. But that was kind of I won't say it was a trending theme throughout the award season, but there's specifically like, I really wanted to see John Eric Bentley, who does the voice for Barrett, to get some love, because I definitely think he was like the shining star of that game. And there's one specific scene that like gets me emotional every time I watch it. So shout out to him. Audio achievement for Ghost of Tsushima. Like I play Ghost of Tsushima, and I think the audio is great. But like, I don't know. I think like The Last of Us Part Two was, which I notoriously am not a big fan of the first Last of Us, but I really enjoyed The Last of Us Part Two.
Interesting.
And I think that the like from a technical standpoint, it was just phenomenal. So that's kind of like that's interesting. Music, Miles Morales is great, but like Ori and the Will of the Wisps was like, come on.
Yeah, and Ori being shut out here is tough to stomach.
And a lesser played game, but I think it had a really, really great soundtrack, was Spiritfarer last year. I love the music of Spiritfarer. So those were like kind of like the ones that, for me personally, that I was just like, I probably would have gone another way. But the most of the rest seem about right to me.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up Ori and the Will of the Wisps, because that, to me, that's no disrespect to Hades, but that should have been the artistic achievement winner. I mean, that game is...
I agree.
Even if you compare it to the first one from 5 years ago, it's like it looks dramatically better, and it's just the way the subtle, like everything kind of rustles in the wind, and the colors and the animation. I mean, it's that's the artistic achievement pick for me. I was happy to see Sea of Thieves get recognized as evolving game, because, you know, all these games as a service and these sort of living games, they all continue to add content and improve the best they can. And many of them have come a long way since their launches, but really great to see Sea of Thieves get that recognition on a big level, big stage like this. I am shocked that the BAFTAs completely shut out Half-Life Alyx, though. That, I know this is, it's a PC game and this is an Xbox show, but holy cow, how did Half-Life Alyx get shut out? But
sorry, Ryan. I
no love, like no V. Even the BAFTA voters don't play VR games.
I feel like it's all kind right. of a, oh, sorry.
No, go ahead, please.
I just feel like it's a similar situation to Ori and the Will of the Wisps. Like, Ori and the Will of the Wisps, I think, was in, like, my top five last year. Like, it was one of those games that if anyone in the award season said, like, this is game of the year, I would have been like, I'm okay with that. Like, I get that. But I just feel like, because it was, I mean, it was on PC as well. I just feel like it didn't get the level of conversation that games like Hades and other games throughout the year got, when it definitely should have. So, like, if you haven't played Ori and the Will of the Wisps, like, I wasn't the biggest fan of the first game from a mechanical standpoint, but, like, Will of the Wisps, like, is, like, amazing. Like, one of the best platformer, like, Metroidvania, like, games I've ever played. It is fun.
Yeah, and it makes, you mentioned it, it makes a lot of mechanical upgrades from the first 100%. One as well. Okay, quickly, because we've got to move on here to the loot box and the trivia, but real fast, the Xbox Games with Gold for April. Let's mention this because everybody's always curious. Is it going to be a good month? Is it going to be a bad month? Yeah. Vikings, Wolves of Midgard, and Dark Void, April
Dark
1st.
Dark Void was fun.
Truck Racing Championship and Hardcore Uprising. Hardcore meaning CORPS, as in Core of Soldiers. Hardcore Uprising, April 16th. Destin?
I like Dark Void. It did some cool stuff. It's an old game. Like, it doesn't hold up very well, but it had some cool concepts with, like, world navigation and things like that, because you would ascend vertically, and I believe you had like a jetpack and stuff like that in the game. But I remember there was something there, but can't all be super winners, right, Ryan?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. I know it's lame to complain about free, but at the same point, like, when do you just kind of shut this down and go and invest those resources elsewhere?
No, don't shut it down. But you know what I would love to see with Games with Gold? Sony just did this. They have, like, 18 awesome titles that are just available if you have PlayStation Plus, Xbox. Do that for Xbox Gold subscribers. Just give them a small library of fantastic titles on the Xbox ecosystem that they can play. I realize that Game Pass is, like, the thing that's being marketed right now. But I mean, even if it was just like 5 mega hits, I think that would be really, really cool to see.
I like that idea.
I agree. Having even the overlap, that's fine, because I think the subscribers that just go for Games with Gold versus Game Pass, those people exist, and I'm sure they would appreciate it.
Yeah. No, that's a good thought. I mean, if you could put Master Chief Collection on there to try and get everybody pumped up for Infinite at the end of the year, even though yes it's on Game Pass, but here you can just own it if you have a gold sub. That's, I like that idea.
Yeah, like Gears 1 remake, you know, one of the Halo Remaster, games, yeah. And then, like, hey, you can play them all on Game Pass. Like, it works in terms of marketing. I'm sure we could come up with 5 games quite easily that would show the Xbox ecosystem quite well, and I know gold fans would absolutely love that.
You could grab a couple of Bethesda games at this point, like Prey, which was criminally underrated, and Fallout 76, to see if, you know, let people give it another chance, that kind of thing.
That's my two cents.
Loot box time. questions coming in via Twitter now. I want to thank the handful of people that have already started sending me those. Again, just tweet a video of yourself asking a question, an Xbox question to the panel. Tag me in it. I'm at @DMC_Ryan on Twitter so that I see it, and then I'll add it to my list, and you can be featured just like Johnny Vinyl coming at you right now.
Hey, Unlockers. I got a question for you. Are there any dormant Xbox IPs that you could see fitting with a Bethesda studio now that they have, well, all those Bethesda studios? I could definitely and would like to see Arkane do an immersive sim like they're famous for in the universe of Shadowrun. I think that'd be a lot of fun. Also, some studio, any studio, I don't care who, bring this back, please.
Well, that Shadowrun from Arkane is such a good choice. That would be phenomenal. That would be, I mean, Shadowrun originally based off of a board game IP, pen and paper IP, role playing. That could be really, really good. Let me go around the table here. Let me start with Cam. Would you like to see any kind of the dormant Xbox IPs, one of the Bethesda studios, take a crack at it?
I'm looking at a list of dormant Xbox IPs, so I'm just like thinking about the one, because it's been a while since these games have come, came out.
Too. Yeah, and there's a pretty long list of cool IPs that Xbox is sitting on.
Yeah, for Bethesda specifically, I really can't think of one. Sorry, it's not specifically Bethesda, but I want a Lost Odyssey 2. Bring back Lost Odyssey. Like, it's like your one JRPG IP that you have, like,
bring that it people back. Adore.
Bring it back. Yeah, it reviewed well. Like, it reviewed well. People just didn't buy it, it seems like, but bring it back. Bring it back.
All right. I like that. Miranda.
I'm not sorry for this. I would have Bethesda Softworks, one of their sub teams or something, work on Fusion Frenzy.
Yep.
Well, that'd be
good. Get out. Now.
Just own it. It's fine. Yeah.
Think of what was it called? The mobile game, the Fallout Vault.
Shelter?
Fallout Shelter. Yes. That was so fun and had its like little quirks to it. I feel like they have what it takes to build a cool party game. So I don't know, guys. I really just want it to come back, okay? It's so good.
This into existence someday, somehow, by you keep putting the energy out into the world, and it's going to happen at some point.
Yeah, again, just like as a small sub project, and especially because we're limited to the ZeniMax studios or the Bethesda game studios, I think it's hard to find a dormant IP that has not already been taken, and then to pair it with one of these guys, it's like, oh gosh. So let's just flex in here and try something really creative.
This is your Snyder cut. You're just gonna campaign and get a new Fusion Frenzy game made some way, somehow.
Fusion Frenzy has like a gritty sort of dark future aesthetic to it. It could work.
I like it. I like it. Destin, how about you?
Okay, I'm really just going to use this as an opportunity to talk about games that I want to see come back. And one that's on Game Pass, it's been on Gold, Rise Son of Rome. That IP just got abandoned, but you go back and you play that thing, you're like, this still looks really, really good. So I would love to see that IP come back. It's just gone, which is strange to me. Yes, it was repetitive, but wow, it had a pretty good combo system. And
great story, too.
Yeah, and the other one, I think Arkane could tackle this one, and this is my forever answer for what series to bring back. Just remake this, Resident Evil 2 style, Legacy of Kain. I don't know if you can see it. I had the physical media a second ago. Soul Reaver. Make Soul Reaver, anybody, please. They just pull it off Steam. Any developer
out
there,
Microsoft can you hear game, me? But that's fine.
Someone turn this into a GIF when you watch this.
Who owns it? I don't even know who owns that IP anymore. I think like Crystal Dynamics.
Well, it should be Square, I would presume, has it. Yeah, because they own.
Yeah.
Yeah, they own Crystal Dynamics, who, so.
And Silicon Knights is gone. They were in like Waterloo, Ontario or something.
Oh yeah, long gone. But yeah, I like that. All right, well, I'll bring it back on topic because we got to get to the trivia and then get out of here. But Machine Games, proven rebooters of things, in the very talented rebooters. I would like to see them give me a story-driven MechWarrior reboot. Because if you go back, MechWarrior 2 is sort of the GOAT MechWarrior. It really blended like simulation, action, but with cool story as well. They could crush MechWarrior. They would do a phenomenal job of that. I would love to see it someday. Maybe when they're done with Indiana Jones. So Johnny Vinyl, thank you so much. And again, tweet me your questions at DMC_Ryan in video form. I'm only accepting video submissions for the time being. All right, Unlock Block trivia time. Dan Morris writes in and asks this: which now acquired Xbox studio was developing an exclusive new IP for the Xbox One prior to its launch, but never saw the light of day? So a canceled Xbox exclusive for Xbox One, never came out, was being done by one of these four studios. Was it Obsidian? Was it Ninja Theory? Was it InXile? Or was it Double Fine? Let me go Destin's way first for this.
I'm 99% sure I know the answer. So.
All right, so I'll come back to you then.
Yeah.
Let me go Cam.
Okay, I honestly don't know, and I'm just going to stick with my gut on this one and just take a educated guess. I'm going to say C, InXile.
Okay, in exile. Miranda, any confidence here?
No.
Not this time.
None at all. yeah, I was thinking about, like, what was I doing around the time the Xbox launched? I was like, well, I was still in college, so I was trying to finish up school as fast as I could. I'm just going to guess Ninja Theory.
Okay. That was my second guess. Destin seemed confident. What do you say, my friend?
Yeah, so this B-roll, every time I need to look for it, is a nightmare to find, but I'm pretty sure it's C in exile.
Let's go. Please be right.
Well,
none of you are
not.
Right. No, no. Right. It was Obsidian. Obsidian had a game, an exclusive game. It got canceled. It was covered in my unfiltered interview with Josh Sawyer, one of the creative leads there. Yeah, they had a game that did not happen for Microsoft. So, of course, that all worked out in the end. They got acquired by Microsoft years later. So, Dan Morris, excellent job of stumping the panel. If anybody else out there has a good Xbox trivia question, send it my way. The email address is unlocked@ign.com. Don't forget the question, the answer, but include four multiple choice answers in there as well. And that will do it for us this week. Find me on Twitter at DMC_Ryan. If you're looking to tag me and get that loot box question in, or you just want to say hi. How about, I'll save Cam for last year. Destin?
Yeah, keep an eye on IGN. I'm working on a project I'm very excited about, and I'm hoping it turns out quite well. A lot of production related to that this week. So you check me out there, Twitter, Destin Legarry, and yeah.
Sounds good. Miranda?
Hello. If you didn't catch it last week, I reviewed Dota Dragon's Blood, and I was so excited because it's my first review in over a year because I just haven't had time. So aside from that, I've been working on some Animal Crossing things, and honestly, I'm just looking forward to planning out our ID at Xbox guide coverage coming up here soon. So I'll definitely be deep diving into that. But otherwise, you can follow me on Twitter, Twitch, and everywhere else at Havoc Grooves. That's Havoc with a K, as always.
Excellent. Cam, we've had a great 10-week run with you. You've had a heck of a run. We will miss you. You will be back. For the time being, though, now that everybody has spent 10 weeks falling in love with you on the podcast, where can we be following your stuff?
Yeah, so I'm currently like just doing freelance work, but I'm actually planning up for a wedding in May. So I'm not, you know, outside of podcasts, not doing a whole lot of work. But I will be once the wedding's all taken care of, because wedding planning takes a lot of time. But you can follow me on Twitter at @CamFinalMix, and I stream on Twitch, twitch.tv/CamFinalMix. Again, thanks everyone for all the love and support that I've gotten for the past 10-ish weeks.
Sweet. Good stuff. You are awesome, and thank you so much for being here. It has been a pleasure, my friend. So, for Cam, Destin, and Miranda, I'm Ryan. This was Unlocked 488, and of course for super producer John Borba as well, who is moving on to another show. We have two departures this week.
Oh,
so we'll miss John. I'm sure he'll pop in from time to time when the need arises. So we will see you all back here for 489 next week. Hey, just kidding. Not quite done yet. Podcast Beyond is coming up tomorrow on youtube.com/IGN Games. Jonathan Dornbush, host of said show. What are you guys going to be talking about on the PlayStation side?
Beyond. Hey, Ryan, we're also going to be diving into a little bit of Cyberpunk and all of the news that came out around CD Projekt Red and their different philosophies of how they approach games now, especially after we spent quite a bit of time last November talking about Cyberpunk when it first launched, even though you still can't buy it on the PlayStation Store. And then we'll be diving a little bit into the Ratchet & Clank PS5 patch that actually, surprise, came out today, which I need to scramble to go play actually right after we record this. So that should be a fun time.
Excellent. All right. Don't miss Podcast Beyond as well as Nintendo Voice Chat, Game Scoop, each publishing a different day of the week. We've got some fun programming on youtube.com/IGN Games. Make sure you go subscribe for all of your favorite IGN shows.
Hello, dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.